here in Alachua, and I am working on a coaching, creating something for continuing parenting education for devotees and the world as well, doing seminars and parenting coaching. And I have a family of my wonderful wife, Ananga Manjari, and two young sons who are so lucky to be in the school here. So that's a little bit about who I am right now.
Who you'll be in a while.
Yes.
So, I had an idea. First, let's welcome Patrick Carroll, Lavananda, Radha Radya, Kremlin, all the regulars. And if any of you are watching and you want to get on chat so you can participate and see what's going on, you can ask questions and see the comments other people are making, because there's a lot going on behind the scenes that you can't see. So, how do you get on the chat? You go on the front page and then you do what? We're going to tell you right now. Okay, you see us on the front page, and then under that it says live chat room. And then what, you click that, and then what, you come up with a password or what? Password says Radhe, and then you'll have to come up with your own password?
You have to log in on Chatsy first, create a user account, and then...
You log in on Chatsy, so when you hit chat, you log in on Chatsy, create a user account, and then they'll ask you for your password. And if you want to do it, well, yeah. Is that clear? Live chat room, click that, and then you'll have to log in and create a password. Okay, you can do that. So, all right, I had an idea. We've been talking for 10 classes. We talked about Vaishnava Aparadha. The last class was kind of the nitty gritty of dealing with sticky relationships, and so I thought, let's go into something positive. Of course, we started going to something positive, but I thought, well, let's go into something positive. Instead of just talking about offending devotees, as I was saying the last few weeks, the better we do something better than offending devotees that would prevent us from offending. So I thought we should now segue into the next topic, which I'm going to India in about 9 weeks. And so we could do this topic for 9 weeks. And I thought the natural segue we should go into is relationships, communication and relationships. We've talked about forgiveness, we've talked about offending devotees, so now let's talk about how to make the relationships work, one of the difficult things that we have in front of us. And just thought I'd read a few letters to warm us up to what Prabhupada said. Well, this is about diversity and working with people you don't agree with. So that's why I have this quote. But for this Krishna consciousness movement, its success will depend on agreement, even though there are varieties of engagement. In the material world, there are varieties, but there is no agreement. In the spiritual world, there are varieties, but there is agreement. That is the difference. So what's the agreement? You want to do a thing one way, I want to do it another way. So what are we agreeing on? Well, we agree on that Krishna is the object we should please. But I may not agree with how you do it, and you may not agree with how I do it. So they say mathematically, if it's either I'm right or you're right, then 1 + 1 = 1/2, right? And then if it's like, well, let's compromise, then 1 + 1 = 1. Or you could say, if it's a good compromise, it'll equal 2. But they say, if you synergize, then 1 + 1 will equal 11. And so, through synergy means what? It may not exactly be what I think is right or what you think is right, but together we come up with something, maybe a third possibility.
Third alternative, yes.
Yeah, that might be even better. So I think that's what Prabhupada is alluding to here, that, you know, we're different, and that's okay, and in a sense it's a good thing we're different, because if everybody were like me, or everybody were like you, or everybody like Bhagavan, then we would have a very limited way of thinking about things. But because we're different, we think of things in different ways. So that's good. But we tend to see it as bad. Either I'm right or you're right. We both can't be right, or you know, one of us has to give in. It's like arm wrestling. The materialist, without being able to adjust the varieties and the disagreements, makes everything zero. They cannot come into agreement with varieties. But if we keep Krishna in the center, then there will be agreement in varieties. This is called unity in... Who knows what it's called? Unity in what? Can anybody say out there? In Christian.com, Bill. Has anyone ever heard this? Unity in, it starts with a D. Diversity, Radha Raja, five gold stars, the Radha Raja. Everyone give Radha Raja a big hand. Okay. So, unity and diversity. I'm therefore suggesting all our men meet in Mayapur every year during the birth anniversary of Lord Chaitanya. With all the GBC and senior men present, we should discuss how to make unity and diversity. In other words, there's a saying, celebrate diversity. Otherwise, we want to make everybody think like who? Like me. I want you all to think like me. Or Bhagavan wants you to think like him. Or Uddhava wants you to think like him. If everyone agrees with me, we all get along. Right? So I'm the CEO, just agree with me and we all get along. Okay. But if we fight on account of diversity, then it is simply the material platform. Please try to maintain the philosophy of unity and diversity. That will make our movement successful. Then I'll read one more thing. The reason why there is difficulty in competitive spirit is that everyone wants to be supreme. Mm. That is a difficulty. So, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I guess if we're all trying to be the controller, in essence, we could say that we're all trying to be right. And when we're trying to be right, or when we're thinking that we're right, we don't open ourselves up to another possibility or another option of somebody else's opinion. Like you were saying earlier, 1 + 1 = 11, or could equal half, or could equal 2. If our way is the only way, if we're being right, then 1 + 1 could only equal what we want it to equal. So if we do what Srila Prabhupada says and we have the same goal and we're open to this diversity, then all of those possibilities are available to us, not just one. So when we close ourselves up, we don't allow anything else in. It all has to be a certain way. And of course, maybe we do want everybody to see everything like us, but how can we grow ourselves in Krishna consciousness? How can we grow ourselves to a new level and learn more if we think our answer is the only right answer?
Well, one of the things that I found very difficult for myself is difficult, but at the same time very helpful. I listened to someone and I would totally disagree. Mm. At the same time, I would think, I need to listen to them because they're looking at something in a different way than I'm looking at it. And I don't have the whole picture. Mm-hmm. And so, if I want to get a better or more holistic view of something, at least I should not de facto think, well, if you don't agree with me, you're wrong, because obviously I've thought of this, I've understood this, I've read about it, I've discussed it with others, and I even teach it, so obviously I'm right. And you should listen to me, because, you know, and I'm older than you, and I'm the guru, too.
Yeah.
If all else fails, you can bring out the guru card.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm the guru, so. And so I've realized that to hear things I don't agree with, it actually broadens my perspective. Mm. And one way it broadens my perspective is just the ability to be able to listen to it without getting upset. Because sometimes you probably also, you listen to something which you totally disagree with, and you can become very upset about it. How can this person think this way? What's wrong with them? Mm. Don't they have a brain? Don't they see? You know, didn't they go to school? Haven't they read Prabhupada's books? Do they have, you know, is their IQ negative 108? You know, we can think of all these ways.
Mm. Yeah, we can. And
and we do.
And we do all the time. And what you're saying about seeing the other person's perspective, or at least listening to it to see it in a different way, it opens yourself up to, not that you have to agree with what they're saying, but it opens up to hear what it's like from their side, from their perspective, from their opinion, because we are all entitled to our opinion, and they may have an opinion. They may not have the same knowledge as you. That's when you pull out that guru card. They may not have to have the same knowledge, but they have the opinion from their limited knowledge. And maybe from my knowledge, I have a different... My opinion maybe used to be like that. But now from gaining more knowledge, or from reading more, or from learning from different gurus and different sources, I have more knowledge and I could see it from above rather than from down here. Does that kind of make sense?
Yes. I think one of the problems we're facing is it's not always just our subjective views, it's our view of Shastra. And then we're thinking, okay, here's the scripture says this, Prabhupada said this, so how can you say that? So kind of de facto, we minimize, or when you say minimize, we think what you're saying is wrong. You don't understand Prabhupada. And I had an experience with this. It was a very interesting experience. I'll relate, and I don't want this to become a controversial issue. And I'm not bringing this up to discuss the issue of Ritvik. And Ritvik philosophy means people who feel that Prabhupada did not empower anyone to be guru, and that we can still accept initiation from him. So there was a discussion once going on with the leaders in India, temple presidents in GBC, and there was polarization at that point. This was about 10 years ago, and some of the leaders had adopted this Ritvik philosophy. Mm-hmm. And some of the leaders had not adopted, and they were opposed to it. And so they're having a discussion, and they were going back and forth. And I had been walking by the room, and I didn't even know they're having a meeting. I peeked in the room, and within a few minutes, I could see what was going on. Different people were presenting why Ritvik is the way we should go, and others were presenting why it's not the way we should go. It's not what Prabhupada wanted. No, Prabhupada wanted it. No, he didn't. So I'm watching, very not emotionally at all involved, and just observing. And after like 3 or 4 minutes, I said, wait a minute. Nobody's going to convince anybody of anything. Everyone's going to come out exactly with the same realization, understanding that they came in with. And it was just a process of people getting up there to convince the other party. Mm-hmm. And everybody failed convincing, and which I assume was going to happen. And I thought, well, perhaps they might have better utilized their time by saying, well, I don't think we're going to agree, but since we don't agree, why don't we discuss what we're going to do now to push on the Krishna consciousness movement in the realization that we're not going to agree on this issue, or there'll be other people who want to partake in the Hare Krishna movement, who want to help, who may have these other philosophies. Is it possible? Maybe we've come to the conclusion it's not possible. I thought that was a better way of dealing. Sometimes we just come up against one another, we disagree, but then the question is, well, what do we do now? How can we disagree but cooperate in some way so we don't become enemies?
So you're saying too, even though we have these disagreements, rather than focusing on what we don't agree upon, let's focus upon what we do agree upon and move forward on what we do agree upon. Yeah. And what, even though we have these disagreements, to move forward in the areas that are going to move the project forward, move the movement forward.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. You hit it on the head.
Thank you.
You can focus on two things. What you agree on or what you disagree on.
Yes.
So, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say something you had said earlier, is that haven't you found the case where that Prabhupada could say one thing, somebody can read the purport to a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, and there's 30 different people in the room, and depending upon that person's level of knowledge, that person's experiences from the past, each of us will interpret it from our conditioning slightly differently, which is where you get all these different factions of this and that.
And that, in a sense, that's normal. Of course, then you have senior gurus to help you work it out. But even you get guidance from a senior person to explain it, the same phenomena can happen. Then you understand it, and your own way. I mean, we saw that in the Gaudiya Math, Prabhupada's Spiritual Masters movement. We see it in our own movement. It's inevitable. Subjectivity is there. And one of the things we find, very common thing, the way we understood Krishna consciousness when we were 25 is not the way we understand it when we're 55. Just because of life experience, if nothing else. And not even necessarily even understanding. If we had no greater understanding of Krishna consciousness in those 30 years, we certainly had greater understanding of life. And perhaps the ability to be less fanatical and more balanced. And the willingness to also to be able to understand that the application of the philosophy can be applied differently for different people.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's a very difficult thing because some people will think, yeah, well, if you think that way, then you're compromising or you're misunderstanding or you're watering it down. But at the same time, that's the very thing we're talking about, that those things will be there. And some people can only act on the basis of what they have the capacity to realize. And if they don't realize something, they're not going to act on what they don't realize, despite how hard they're beat over the head with it.
Hmm.
So we have to acknowledge that and deal with it. If we're going to coexist peacefully, and I wanted to read something if I have it. It's exactly about this.
About coexisting in relationships. It's about developing the relationship.
It's right here. It's from the Bhagavatam. Yeah, it's about how Krishna is pleased when we work together. And I think in this understanding, it's like sometimes you may know you're right and someone's wrong, but it doesn't mean that now you're right and they're wrong and they have to surrender my way or the highway. You may have to deal with them as if they're also their opinion and their feelings are also valid.
Yes, I get that all the time with my kids. Where I have to tell them that there is a way that you are both right. You, from your perspective, from your opinion, you're right, and you're right as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's there. So I'll read this verse in purport. It's nice. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear sons of the King, I am very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I am so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune." This is Krishna speaking. "Now you may ask a benediction of me."
Hmm.
Mon gestures with us, but he has to work. He's really busy.
"Thank you for being here anyway, even though you're really busy.
Now, if you would have known before you came into the material world that you're going to be really busy, maybe you would have changed your mind." They didn't tell us that, you know. It's like they got a raw end of the deal. They didn't tell us what was going to be going on down here. If we would have known, we would have made other choices, I believe. Okay. "Since the sons of King Pachini Barhisha were all united in Krishna consciousness, the Lord was very pleased with them. Each and every one of the sons of King Pachini Barhisha was an individual soul, but they were united in offering transcendental service to the Lord. The unity of the individual souls attempting to satisfy the Supreme Lord or rendering service to the Lord is real unity. In the material world, such unity is not possible. Even though people may officially unite, they all have different interests." Well, what's their interest? Maybe personal interest or group interest or national interest. "In the United Nations, for instance, all the nations have their particular national ambitions, and consequently they cannot be united. Disunity between individual souls is so strong within the material world that even in the society of Krishna consciousness, members sometimes appear disunited due to their having different opinions and leaning toward material things." Wow. Leaning toward material things. What are those material things they're leaning towards? I think Prabhupada's referring here to our material desire, ambition. Because that's what he's talking about. A personal interest. Leaning towards our personal interest. I want to do this. No, I want to do it. No. This happened a lot when Prabhupada was here. What do we say? Power trips? You know, we were all like 25. The movement was being run by 25-year-olds. So generally 25-year-olds, it takes a time before they become a little humble.
Hmm.
You know, 20, you know, like 25 to 40, like the years of intense ambition. And you think, you know, everybody's like watching you. You know, and you know, ego. It got pretty messy sometimes. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be two opinions. There is only one goal, to serve Krishna to one's best ability. If there is some disagreement over service, such disagreement is to be taken as spiritual.
Wow.
Because it's for Krishna's pleasure. Those who are actually engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be disunited in any circumstance. That's nice. Those who are actually engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be disunited in any circumstance, because we're all serving Krishna, so that's the unity. This makes the Supreme Personality of Godhead very happy and willing to award all kinds of benedictions to his devotees, as indicated in this verse. So Prabhupada's saying, if we're actually devotees, if we're really devotees, we'll be united, we'll cooperate on some level. And then Krishna will be pleased, and he'll be willing to award all kinds of benedictions to his devotees, as indicated in this verse. We can see that the Lord is immediately prepared to award all benedictions to the sons of King Pachini Barshat. So it brings to the point that, you know, we want to move things in this world. We want to make things happen. But here, if you please Krishna, so many things will happen.
It's very funny in a way. I was sent this verse about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, by?
Akura.
Ah.
By Akura, where there was a sort of disagreement between some different devotees about different things. And mm-hmm. Akura said, basically we're discussing things over email, and something got a little heated. And he was saying how he sent the verse and said, this would be a good discussion for us all to join together and talk about what are we doing together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it really a disagreement if we're both going along the same path towards serving the devotees and serving Krishna? So it's very timely that you brought this up right now. Thank you.
You're welcome. So now, okay, well let's take it from the practical point of view. We're in a situation, we're dealing with somebody, and we disagree, or they say something and we think it's totally wrong, or partially wrong, or we think they're narrow-minded, or if we're liberal, we think that's way too conservative for me. If we're conservative, that's way too liberal for me. Or we feel that this person, they've got so many emotional problems that their whole take on the philosophy is just has nothing to do with philosophy. It has everything to do about their history, and they can't, you know, and they hate everybody and every. They hate every person that's in authority. They hate every guru. They hate every GBC because their parents mistreated them, and therefore they hate authority. And so we're looking at it like that. And there's no validity in what he's saying. It's all his emotional issue. You know, we all go through these things. And these are realities. If you haven't gone through them, you will. So just stay tuned for it. It'll happen if it hasn't happened yet. And, you know, there's always this dynamic conservative, liberal. Well, my guru said this, but Prabhupada said this, and he said that, and what's right. And so when we're in the heat of this, we can get very upset. So what are the attitudes we need to develop so that these don't become issues and we can work through them productively in a way that everybody's satisfied, nobody's agitated, and everybody's inspired? Because it's very important that when we're working together, that we all remain enthusiastic. And we have the potential to become very disunited. We have the potential to discourage others.
Yes.
So what do you do?
Well, the hardest part is that when you're in the thick of it, when you're in the middle of the situation, I tend to, and we all do in a way, tend to react from this past conditioning, from this past programming, rather than sometimes giving ourselves a little space. So part of it is the practice. What's the word out there? Practice. It's practicing giving yourself sometimes...
They're out there.
They're out there. Sorry, I'm looking over here. So, thank you. Giving yourself the space to understand where might this person be coming from. Understand what is the need, what are they trying to communicate to me. I have certain wants and certain needs that I'm trying to communicate, and I'm trying to communicate my needs, and this person is also trying to communicate their needs. And both Stephen Covey and Marshall Rosenberg, who wrote the Nonviolent Communication book, they both say, first try to understand. And I guess Krishna says, just try to understand the truth as well. But the first point is trying to understand where they're coming from, then to having them understand where we're coming from. So I guess in a sense, it's taking that humble position of stepping back from this place of I'm right to saying, okay, I'm willing to be empathetic and get into your shoes and see it as much as possible that I can from your perspective. And once we can do that, we can take a little shift outside ourselves and see it from a different place. And I think that helps to open the communication to also having them see it from your point of view.
And by the way, if you're married or planning to get married and you don't know how to do this, then we can take bets on the day, how many years you'll make it before you get divorced. I don't want to curse anybody out there. So
my wife was saying today that, which, well, I'm sure people have heard already, that there's an epidemic of divorce going on.
Yeah.
In the country and the world.
Well,
so.
I'm involved in a lot of discussions, and what you described, what Bhagavan just described, is constantly happening. Someone says something, somebody disagrees, makes their point. They may make it politely, they may make it sarcastically. Mm. They make their point. The other person makes their point. The other person makes their point. And basically what's going on is this. And one of the things that I'm finding missing, and I don't want to say everybody's like this, but I find it quite common, is that before responding, people are not doing what Bhagavan's saying. So let me see if I get this straight. What you're saying is that you think this because of this, or you feel this, or your experience is this, and therefore you've concluded that. That's not going on. What basically is going on is, what I see going on is, people have preconceived ideas, and whoever agrees with those preconceived ideas makes you feel good, and whoever doesn't makes you mad. And to the degree that they disagree with you, and to a question, depending on how polarized their disagreement is, you become very upset. And one of the things that I was saying initially, so difficult to do, is particularly if someone says something to you that is pretty much the antithesis of what you believe, that's really hard to just sit in that. So what you're saying is, like, let's say you think Obama is the best president in the world, that the world's ever seen, and I think he's the worst. And I'm telling, Bhagavan thinks Obama was the best thing that ever happened to the United States since what? What's the saying? You're the best thing that happened since what?
I don't know.
There's some saying, you know, the best thing since donuts or French
toast. JFK or something.
Yeah, it's the best thing since JFK. And I think he's worse than Bush. I think it's the worst thing that ever happened. And I'm telling that to Bhagavan. Obviously, it's going to agitate him. It's upset him. So in order to open up communication, what Bhagavan has to do, what he's saying is, you know, step back, become detached. It's in sliced bread. Radha Raja's awake. Bhagavan thinks Obama is the best thing since sliced bread, since chapatis. And Mahatma thinks he's the worst thing. No, I don't think this one. Not with things. The worst, for the sake of discussion, I think it's the worst thing that hit the planet in the last, since the beginning of Kali Yuga. So, or the worst leader since the beginning of Kali Yuga. As some, you know, conservatives would think.
Right.
So now Bhagavan's got to step back and be extremely detached when he's listening to this, because he feels like punching Mahatma in the nose, because Mahatma is such a dunce. He has no brain. And he thinks this and that and the next thing. So
yes.
That's what we're dealing with. And we're dealing with the challenge to be detached enough to be able to listen and get behind another person's point of view. A lot of times when you get behind their point of view, you actually start to understand.
Yeah.
It starts to make sense. Even if you don't agree with it, at least you see the sense of, so I understand. Well, if you believe this, that would make sense. And that also releases the emotion.
And another big thing, and I think this goes into what you're talking about creating aparads, is when a person says something that we totally disagree with and it's totally way off what we agree with, is to not judge the person according to what they're saying before we have an understanding of where they're coming from.
Only an idiot would say that.
Say what?
What that? You
know,
no. Yeah, what you think in your mind.
Yes.
Only an idiot could say that, or only someone who doesn't understand.
Well, I think we end up being idiots a lot of time. Because we end up saying, just blurting out the first, when it brings up this emotion of anger, whatever it is, we tend to blurt out this emotion that really is putting the other person down, judging the other person, and then that totally, like you said, is butting heads with them.
Well, you want to hear something funny?
Sure, let's
hear it. Or interesting? Years ago, Jayadwaita Swami wrote a paper, and the paper was entitled... Entitled or titled? Do I have my choice?
Titled.
Titled. What's entitled?
That you're entitled to your rights, or you're entitled to your opinion about what title means. You know.
That's what happens when you somehow would make it into the University of California system, but you spend more time goofing off than going to class. You don't know the difference between entitled and titled. I'm entitled to not know the difference between titled and entitled because there's a lot of stuff going on when I went to college to divert me. So the title of his article, Where the Ritviks Are Right and Where the Ritviks Are Wrong. So what he did was he looked at all the things Ritviks were saying, and he wanted to point out that a lot of things they were saying were correct. It's not that everything was wrong.
Right.
So I think this falls into the line of what you're saying. Like sometimes, let's use an example, conservative and liberal.
Mm.
So the conservative is going to say something, so immediately the red flags go off, it's all wrong because they're conservative. Or if you're a conservative, liberals are saying. Or if you're not a Ritvik, then what the Ritviks say is wrong. Or if you don't agree with a certain philosophy that certain devotees are buying into or whatever, then whatever they say is wrong. So I thought this was so nice that he could be open enough and say, wait, look at it. Well, they're saying these five things or 10 things they're saying, they're not wrong. It's just he didn't agree with their conclusion, but that's another thing. It's not that everything they said was wrong. So I thought that was really good. That because generally we're on the other right. Well, whatever they say must be wrong. Carte blanche.
Yes. I was just reading today as well that I'm not sure what the exact percentage is, but let's say 85 for the sake of discussion, that 85% of disagreements in communication are due to a misunderstanding. Whether it's due to a culture or not understanding the language properly or having a different level of knowledge, but that's what a lot of disagreements come from. So what you said earlier about when you say something to me, I kind of, so what I hear you say is this. No, that's not at all what I'm saying. So that when you're kind of...
assumption.
Yeah, when you're kind of giving it back to them, you can be in communication and relationships, if you are able to say back to them what you thought you heard them say, so that they have this feeling that they're being understood, it takes out a lot of the disagreement and takes out a lot of the conflict.
That's called menu listening.
Menu listening.
You you go to a restaurant, you go to a Hare Krishna restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and the Hare Krishna waiter comes up and says, "Hari Bol Prabhu, what would you like to order?" And you say, "I would like a Bhima burger, and I would like some kafka and malpura, and I would like some rice and samosas." You getting hungry out there?
I am.
And all of you on the West Coast, you're getting hungry. It's your dinner time. And I would like that other sabji, which is deep fried in ghee, potato, cauliflower, pea, with the ghee, sour cream sauce with spice, a little sugar in the sauce. Yeah, that was the one we used to eat when we were 22, which is why we couldn't get along, because after we'd eat that, we'd just fight. We were so agitated. So then I say to the waiter, "Could you read back what I ordered?" And he goes, "You ordered the sabji with eggplant and tomatoes and green peppers and yogurt." And I go, "No, I didn't order that. I ordered the one with the cauliflower and peas and potatoes." And, "Oh, I'm sorry." And then so what you're saying is, like, someone says something and says, "So what you mean is this?" And they go, "No, I didn't mean that at all."
Right.
Saves you a lot of trouble. Like,
yes.
That could save you, like, years of trouble.
Yes.
That could save a marriage. You know,
yes.
Just like, no, I didn't mean that. Assumptions are a big problem. You know, I was just reading something, really wonderful thing. Would you all like to hear it? Brenda Lee, you're hungry. Go eat. The video froze.
I think somebody wrote it all down.
The video froze? No. I went into samadhi. And they stopped moving. No. The video froze. We're still moving here.
Really slow. There we go.
Yeah. So, what was I saying? I got the real
time. You went to samadhi. No.
Something seems wrong with the stream. Brenda Lee, ditto. Everybody, try refreshing the page. It was working here on our browser.
Working now, says Bhakti and Carol. Thank you.
It's working now? Okay. So I totally forgot what I was saying. Who can remember? What was I saying?
You were asking them something out there.
What was I asking you? We were talking about... I said, I heard something. Oh, yeah, okay, I remember now. So I heard something that's really nice. Something called imaginary contracts. Imaginary contracts. Just remember this. This can save you in many situations from getting into having so many problems. What's an imaginary contract? Imaginary contract is when you assume a person is going to act in a certain way, but you never had any agreement with them to act that way.
Okay.
Isn't that interesting? You know, I'm assuming, like, Uddhava's here, Uddhava's producing the show. So I make assumption, he's going to be on time, he's going to have everything together. Everything's going to work, you know. But we never actually, I mean, you know, we could say, well, we did talk about it. But, you know, that's not a good example. Let's say, I'm assuming every time I come, Uddhava's going to massage me. But he's never massaged me. Yet, and I was like, I can't forgive him now for not massaging me. Because I had an imaginary contract. Because actually, I'm a senior devotee. And everybody knows I'm a great devotee. Just the fact that I come here to do this is just my mercy. And it's Uddhava's great fortune that he gets to be here and do this service for me.
Oh, I thought Uddhava was down there massaging your feet already.
So, you know, I made the assumption, yeah, at least
yes.
He would be bathing my feet and giving me garlands and massaging me, but he hasn't. And I have. So, you know, that's an imaginary contract.
And what happens then? You get upset about it?
Yeah.
When the imaginary contract is not fulfilled, you get upset?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So we never made the contract. So I have an assumption now he should be doing these things.
Yes.
And he's had this assumption about me, that Mahatma is puffed up to the sky and I won't even touch his feet in a million years, even if he gave me $100,000, because, like, he's like, he thinks he's, like, you know, God's gift to the human society. So he's, you know, so we both have these imaginary contracts going on. So
I think Bhakti and Carol had the assumption, the imaginary contract, that you're going to make her cauliflower sabji. So
Bhakti and Carol, if you come to Alachua, I'll make you cauliflower sabji. Which reminds me, now let's take a break for a word from our sponsor.
Okay.
Sponsor. Okay. We have to have a commercial, so I have to be somebody else. Did it. So we're going to have a forgiveness seminar on Saturday, October 31st from 10 to 5 at the Bhakti Marg Ashram and Retreat Center. And the Bhakti Marg Ashram Retreat Center is right here in Alachua, Florida, sunny Alachua.
It's great.
Where the weather is good. You come in the end of October and it's going to be 82 degrees. Is that great if you're living in, you know, Ohio or somewhere?
Why spend your Halloween trick-or-treating when you can when you can learn to forgive all those ghosts and ghouls and goblins and pumpkins?
Or you can forgive the... We'll teach you how to forgive the ghosts and goblins. So, we're going to have this. That Bhakti Marg Retreat Center is actually on my property. And we have a room there in our neighbor's home. It's a 10-acre property with myself and my neighbors. And this is the beginning of our retreat center, and we're going to do our first program. Well, right now my wife does yoga classes, so we're going to do our first program, Life of Total Forgiveness, October 31st, 10 to 5. If you want more information, then you email me at mahat@aol.com. And you can come if you ever wanted to come to Alachua in the fall of this year. You can come. And the first person, the first one or two people to contact me to come will stay in my home. I'll put them up in my home. What do you think of that?
That's a good deal.
And the cost of this is even, it gets better. We probably have room for a couple people. Yeah, we could take at least two, maybe three. And the cost is zero.
Wow.
And we're just going to ask for donations. That's all. So if you're not rich, you can still come. And if you're rich, you can give $1 million, no problem.
I like it.
So, and the next day I'm going to Atlanta to do it again, if you want to come to Atlanta.
I might be with you right there.
Yeah, and he may be coming also. And so anyway, you write me. The first two or three to write me can stay in my home.
Wow.
That's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, right?
Yes, definitely.
And... then we'll have the chance to cook sour cream sabji. So this is the thing. If you don't know how to cook, just put a lot of ghee, a lot of butter, a little sugar and sour cream. It tastes good. You can impress anybody. Fried in ghee, throw in some sour cream, salt and pepper, a little chili and ginger. Ooh. You become the cook of chef of chefs. Okay. So that's October 31st from 10 to 5. You can come on Friday night. Stay over. And this seminar is going to be, it's not going to be anything like what I do on Krishna.com. It's appetizer. I can't give everything away on Krishna.com because then no one would come to the seminar. But in the seminar, we actually do the work.
So it's experiential.
It's totally experiential. You deal with your issue. We force you to deal with your issue. It's so nice. I can't explain how nice it is. And you get to see me in full form. Here I'm just sitting in a chair. I can't do anything. But you get to see me. You get to see the real Mahatma when you come to Alachua. And you can chant Japa with me. Because I'm Japa Man. I'm also known, another name I have is Japa Man.
Oh, and I was, what's that? Japa Man? Did you see the skit about Japa Man?
I didn't see it.
There's a skit that, that was done at the Festival of Inspiration.
Oh, I didn't see it. Someone's chanting bad Japa and Japa Man shows up? Is that it?
Yeah, well, I was actually Jimmy, who is the character, and he has a team of Prajalpsers who are his office co-workers who are talking Prajalpa, and Jimmy's trying not to get caught up in the Prajalpa and just trying to focus on Krishna and his Japa, and he gets swayed over and starts to talk Prajalpa, and... Japa Man comes to save him. And then there's a epic battle between Japa Man and the Prajalpser. Go to YouTube, search up Japa Man, you can find it.
Oh, cool. So you get to chant Japa with the real Japa Man.
There we go.
You revolutionize your Japa just by, you know. I'm so humble it drives me crazy. I can't take it. Oh, Krishna.
True humility.
Krishna, you know. Why even try to be humble, you know? It's just like, it takes lifetimes, you know, sometimes. Mm. Anyway, there was a court case, and there was a football player. He was the quarterback. It was 1940s. He was the quarterback of the Notre Dame team. And he went on trial, and he said, you know, you tell the truth, the whole truth. He said, yeah. And then the lawyer said, do you do your job well? And he said, yes, I do. He says, how well do you do it? He said, well, I'm the best quarterback that Notre Dame has ever had.
Hmm.
He was a really humble guy. And the coach said, how could you say that? And he goes, I was under oath. I had to tell the truth.
Yes.
So, I just have to tell the truth, you know. I'm still humble. You know, you can chant with Japa men, so, you know. What can I say?
That's very...
Yeah. So, all right. So, if you want to come, you're more than welcome. You email me. So, the phones are... You can call. The phones are already ringing off the hook. You better get in. You better get your call in now. Oh, I hate that advertising so much. I just like doing it because I hate it. Okay, so anyway,
back to the show.
I want to read something, a story. You're really going to like this because this relates to what we're talking about, and it's going to relate more and more to what we're going to be talking about in the future. And this is it's about what we're talking about is the difficulty in entering the world of another person when you disagree with them. I mean, if you agree with them, it's easy to, you know, you're on the same wavelength. But to understand why they would do something, and how they could say such things, and it's oftentimes it just seems like impossible. We want them to stop talking. We just want to talk.
Yes.
We want to shut them up. We want to put them in their place. We want to tell them they're wrong. We want to tell them why they're wrong, and we want to tell them what's wrong with them that made them think the way they're thinking. Because you're like this, therefore you think like that, and therefore you say like that. And then we want to tell them what's going to happen in the future if you keep talking that way, how it's going to ruin everything. I don't know if any of you have ever been around people like that or done that yourself. And if you're like that, you're probably saying, yeah, but he needs to be told that. Right?
Yeah. He needs to be told that.
Yeah, and I'm the one, and no one's going to tell him but me. And if I don't tell him, he's just going to go off. So I'm telling him. So that may be true, but that's not what we're talking about right now. We're talking about unity and diversity, how to create better communication. Okay. Would you all like to hear a story?
I would.
It's a very nice story. Well, since Bhagavan wants to hear it, we're going to hear it. We don't care about you guys out there. If you don't want to hear about it, you can do something else. Okay. Back in the 3rd century. What century?
It's got to be the 3rd.
3rd century. A.D. The king, Sao, I don't know how to say this, T-S-A-O.
Sao.
Sao. Is that it?
Yeah, Sao.
King Sao. Okay. Sent his son, Prince
Tai.
Tai. King Sao and King Tai to the temple to study under the great master, Pan Ku. Because Prince Tai was to succeed his father as king, Pan Ku was to teach the boy the basics of being a good ruler. So, the king is named Sao.
That works.
How do you say it?
Sao.
Sao. And the prince is named Tai. And the guru is named
Pan Ku.
And the king is sending Prince Tai to Kong, to Pan Ku, to learn. I'm just trying to remember this. I know you guys out there already have it.
Yes. Kong Pao, is that a thing? Pan Ku.
King Kong, I don't know. Okay. So he's going to teach him how to be a good king. When the prince arrived at the temple, the master sent him alone to the Ming Li Forest. After 1 year, the prince was to return to the temple to describe the sound of the forest. So he had 1 year to listen, and he didn't have a tape recorder. So he just had to describe it. When Prince Tao returned, Pan Ku asked the boy to describe all that he could hear. Master, replied the prince, I could hear the cuckoos sing, the leaves rustle, the hummingbirds hum, the crickets chirp, the grass blow, the bees buzz, and the wind whisper and holler. When the prince had finished, the master told him, "Go back. Go back and listen to what more you can hear." The prince was puzzled. He had not discerned everything already? For days and nights on end, the young prince sat alone in the forest, listening. But he heard no sounds other than those. He said, but he heard no sounds other than those he already heard. He's being sent back to hear more sounds, but he didn't hear anything else. Then one morning, as the prince sat silently beneath the trees, he started to discern faint sounds unlike those he had ever heard before. The more accurately he listened, the clearer the sounds became. A feeling of enlightenment enveloped the boy. "These must be the sounds the master wished me to discern." When Prince Tai returned to the master asked him what more he had heard. Who could guess what he heard? Anybody in the studio audience can guess? Anybody out there on chat can guess what he heard? He heard the unheard. What was the unheard? The sound of flowers opening. The sound of the sun warming the earth. The sound of the grass drinking the morning dew. The master nodded approvingly. "To hear the unheard," remarked Peng Ku, "is a necessary discipline to be a good ruler. For only when a ruler has learned to listen closely to the people's hearts, hearing their feelings uncommunicated, pains unexpressed, and complaints not spoken of, can he hope to inspire confidence in his people, understand when something is wrong, and meet the true needs of his citizens. The demise of states comes when leaders listen only to superficial words and not penetrate deeply into the souls of people to hear their true opinions, feelings, and desires." So, can you speak on that?
Yeah, as you were saying that, it reminded me that of, I guess, a similar journey. It wasn't a whole year in the forest, but I was sent in the forest to kind of do the same thing.
Really?
Yes. And what I started hearing after getting over my mind chatter was starting to hear my, let's say, Krishna inside. Starting to hear and ask the questions from my heart and my soul rather than what my mind's saying to distract me. And it's funny because one of the things was, as I was walking down this path, I was started to ask, okay, simply questions and listening from what came up first and how what came up from feeling of which way to go. You know, let's just not say not in life as a metaphor or anything like that, but which way just to go on the path. And so, you know, first answer I got was left. Second time I asked, there was a split. I said, which way should I go? And the answer I heard immediately without the mind coming up was, follow those who went before you. And then I got really confused because I said, but they went both ways. Which way should I go? And the answer that came up immediately again was, does it matter? Does it really matter? If you're being in the present moment, you're focused. And then actually I felt a tickle in the back of my neck and I turned and it was like a tree touching me, tickling me. And then the answer I got immediately from that was, be in the present and have fun. You don't have to be so serious. Am I doing the right thing? Which way am I going? So if we really respect that silence and start listening to, rather than, well, I guess the silence in the Bhagavad Gita, it says quieting the mind is more, controlling the mind is harder than controlling the wind. But if you can do it for a few seconds and you can start to listen to Krishna in the heart, in a sense, that's what they're saying. Seeing the other people's heart feeling from within, that silence of what's coming up. You can get all the answers.
Well, I was
self-realization.
I was also thinking, yeah. I was also thinking how when you're trying to listen to somebody, like you're saying, be present, you know, with your own heart. You have to be present. If you want to listen, you have to be present.
Yes.
So what does it mean to be present? Well, to be thinking of the past is the mode of ignorance, and to be thinking of the future is the mode of passion. So to be able to listen to someone, even just not even what this is talking about, just to listen to what they're saying, not the feelings deeper, just to be present. And in order to be present, then we can't be in our world of thinking what I'm going to tell them.
Right. And it's so often that, and we have to notice all the time that you're saying something, it brings up your, let's say we're in a communication and you're discussing something with me. Suddenly my mind comes up with, oh yeah, that reminds me of going into the past. What I want to say to him is this, going into the future. And I'm no longer hearing you and listening to you. I'm somewhere in my own past and future wanting to tell you what I want to say, so I'm no longer actively listening to you. So that, you know, the nine processes of devotional service, the first thing is shravanam, the hearing. And that, in a sense, is very difficult to actually do it, because we always think, well, I need to say my opinion. So true listening and true hearing is, as those come up, letting them go and constantly coming back to being to the present, out of the past, out of the future, back to the present.
Yeah, and that's difficult. You ought to try it sometime. Like, I'll give you a lesson for this week. Being in the now, be here now,
yeah.
The power of now. When someone's talking, just try to... if we look at it, try to be with them. If we look at it, I like to look at it from the point of view that I'm so concerned about my life and myself and what's going on in my mind.
Yes.
And that makes it difficult to be concerned about what's going on in the mind and heart of somebody else. Or as this is saying, even to know what's going on in their heart, to be able to even want to. Because you have to want to be able to know. And I'm so concerned about what's going on with my life. And what we learn again and again from Shastra, from Srila Prabhupada, and even from the world of psychology is that as soon as we're concerned about someone else, our problems are no longer concerns. Now we're concerned. That's the solution to our problem. Our problems is often to be concerned about someone else's problems. And also that whatever we give, we always get back. So we give this kindness to others. We give sympathy. We're compassion to others. That comes back to us without any effort on our own. So it's. I've always found it's sometimes a big challenge to get out of my world into another person's world. But I've always noticed that's like a very high level of Krishna consciousness when you're actually there, because now you're not worried about yourself. It's like you're saying, well, go left, go right, it doesn't matter. It's like, you know how sometimes people they're so concerned. Should I do this? Should I not do this? Should I get the red one or the orange one? I don't know. Do I like red? And they're asking themselves, do I like red more than I like orange? It's like people are psychotic. You know, we're so over consumed. Well, you know, I have, my friend has that red computer, but you know, but now they don't have the same color anymore. But they got the burgundy one. But I really wanted the red one, so I'm really bummed out, and I don't know if I'm okay with the burgundy one.
Sounds like choosing paint samples.
Yes. Which we just did today.
Yes.
My wife and I. And I was thinking of this while we were doing it. And as soon as we get out of our world of what we like and what we don't like, into the world of serving others, into their world, it's just phenomenal what happens. It's like an instant dose of solutions to problems. And so, you know, in the story saying, if you're going to be a leader, if you're going to help people, that's where you have to be. You can't just listen to what they're saying. You've got to go really into their world.
Mm.
And that's, you know, out of your own chitter chatter and out of your own world to defeat everybody. And like you're saying, also, I think it's really, really what you said, you know, what's their need? They're expressing, you know, when people are talking, you know, there's a need there. A lot of times when people are talking philosophy, they're not even talking philosophy. They're expressing their own emotional need. It's just coming out.
Yes.
You know, it's coming out in terms of dissatisfaction or understanding. But it's actually, you know, if you look really deeper, you can see a need. This one man, he kept getting in accidents. And he finally was made to realize that he wanted to be loved so much that he would just end up getting an accident so he could get sympathy from all his friends. And the person was counseling them and said, that's not going to help you. All your friends are thinking, oh, you're such a jerk. You keep getting accidents and I have to waste my time going to hospital to see you. So that's what they're thinking. They're not really loving you.
It happens the same thing is that in psychology, especially the psychology of children, sometimes the way the children are treated with as they're in the first 3 years of their parenting, if they're treated with, you know, violence or even frustration or yelling, they equate that with love. So when they get to adulthood, they search out these relationships where somebody screams and yells at them because they still equate that with love.
Right, yeah. Worse. Yeah, it gets worse also.
Yes.
Where they want to get sexually abused because they were sexually abused when they were younger. Yeah. So there's, but if we can hear the unheard sounds of the forest of what's, you know, really in someone's heart and go there, and, you know, we may not agree with them, but certainly we can get along better and they'll appreciate that we're listening to them and be more inclined to listen to us.
Yes, we don't have to agree with them at all to have empathy for them. If we understand where they're coming from and why, what their underlying need is, it doesn't mean we have to agree or disagree with the opinion, but at least they know and we know that we have an understanding of where they're at or where they're coming from.
So sometimes it's just for the other person to acknowledge that you've understood me, and that's a big thing. And then they'll be more likely to understand you.
Yeah. I have a quote from Deepak Chopra that says, all disagreements are a result of misunderstanding someone else's level of consciousness.
Yeah. So the more we can seek to understand,
yes,
rather than to be understood, the more we can try to understand. It's a different paradigm.
Right. Well, even that, if we're at a higher level of consciousness or someone else is at a higher level of consciousness than us, we may have to, you know, they say the term, come down to their level. Or, in the other sense, they have to grow their level in order to understand exactly where we're coming from.
I think also in the guru-disciple relationship, so often the disciple wants to understand the mind of the guru, you know, the mind and the heart of the guru, so he can satisfy him. And the disciple is reluctant to throw all kinds of problems on the guru.
Mm.
So you can also apply this to relationships with superiors that you want to please. What do they really want from me? What is their desire? What will make them happy? That's very liberating. You know, because a lot of times when we go to superiors, we just want to throw all our problems on them.
Right.
And a lot of times our problems are solved in trying to satisfy them. And then, you know, through their mercy, so much comes. So, it's 9:05. Does anyone out there have some dying question? Because we didn't get any questions. Oh, you were so intrigued and mesmerized by what we're saying, you forgot to ask any questions. You came so much into our world that you didn't want to take us out with questions. So that's nice of you. I appreciate that. And we're going to be talking more about this, and we're going to be reiterating some of these points again and again, and after that we'll reiterate them
again
because It is my experience that this is very difficult to do. It's not difficult to understand, but it's difficult to do because our knee-jerk reaction is to, when someone says something we disagree with,
butt heads with them.
Yeah, that's our, you know, and it's hard to just be detached, listen, get into their world. And, but if we can do it, it makes such a difference in relationships. And this is really what, as spiritualists trying to advance in Krishna consciousness, is really what we're supposed to be doing.
So what I hear you saying is that, and what I like to say is that it takes practice and practice and practice and practice and practice and until the day you die.
Yeah. And they've even found that counselors,
yeah,
whose job it is to do this, find it difficult to do this.
Yes.
Because we just want to put people in their place. You don't know what you're talking about. Prabhu, just listen to me. You don't know what you're talking about.
But I have a PhD.
That's why you don't know what you're talking about, because you have a PhD. You should have never gone to school. That was a big mistake. Become an ass, you know, Prabhupada said. So, you know, that's our, we have to, you know, see our tendency for that, be able to understand, listen, and have dialogue.
You know, one last thing I'd like to say is that, that just came up to me, is that a lot of times when we see something in a communication that we get really upset about, a lot of times it's something in ourself that we don't like to see when we do.
Hold that thought for next week.
Thank you.
And yet the audio will be available. That thought, a lot of times we see something in someone else. Say that again.
We see something when we have a, when we, some, when someone else says something that we really disagree with or we get angry about, it's something inside ourself that we might get angry with ourself about.
Yeah. And also the converse is true. When we really want something, or really have a need for something, oftentimes we'll see, I want to say this, we'll see a good quality in someone.
Yes.
And we really want that quality ourselves, and then that also creates a, some, you know, like, oh, I really want someone to love me. You know, well, I really need love. I need to be respected. That person is showing respect. It's also a sign that we need to be, take care about of ourselves better and respect ourselves more. So, thank you all for listening. Let's give Bhagavan a big hand.
Thank you.
For coming.
Hare Krishna.
And hopefully he will come more. And we'll see you next week. And Hare Krishna. And hopefully I'll see you in Alachua on the 31st. Thank you.
Thank you.
Vibhul.